Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another week of Redbeard Radio. I am Alana Dickman, a partner at Redbeard Ventures, and I am your co-host, along with Drew Austin, the founding partner of Redbeard Ventures. This week, we're also going to have a special guest, Alex Pattis, who is a GP of Riverside Ventures, which is an early stage venture capital firm investing in high growth technology. He also has a syndicate as well on AngelList, and also a founding team member of Hampton, which is a private and highly vetted community for founders and CEOs. But before we dive in, guys, we're doing this weekly. Make sure to like, follow, subscribe. Redbeard Radio is also sponsored by Alto, and Alto makes it easy for individuals to invest in alternative assets with their retirement funds through a self-directed IRA. So you could access private deals on Alto Marketplace, their new platform for accredited investors. So you visit altoira.com/marketplace to learn more. But Drew, how's it going? I'm stoked to talk to you about this. I feel like we've talked about your story a little bit, about how you got started and how you really started a syndicate and a little differences between a syndicate versus a fund. But I want to start off by throwing it over to you. Like, what was your first experience starting Redbeard Ventures and investing in your first startup?
Yeah, so it'll be a fun topic today. We're going to dig into, you know, the syndicates with Alex. I'm excited. There's a lot to syndicates. It's like, and I think it's still, we're still in the early days. I mean, there, obviously it's been, you know, it's been going on for years on AngelList especially, but there are now a lot of platforms that are enabling syndicate managers far more than ever before. Especially when we first came on, it was pretty much AngelList. That was the only option. I know Carta was just getting started and there were a few others, but we jumped on, for me, I wanted to figure out how to get exposure to investing in companies. And the starting place before I even launched the syndicate was I started just like joining existing syndicates to start to look at deal flow and just give myself like that process of filtering and seeing deals and getting a feel for what was I excited about? What did I want to dig into further? Where were when I would look at a deal memo, like what questions did I have? So I could start to figure out like what would investors like me want to see? And also what would investors like me be excited about and what would they want to invest in? So, it started with me just going through and starting to curate my own, the deals that I would see, maybe write a few small checks to just get things started. And then once we launched the syndicate, in the beginning, I was really thinking, I treated it like a fund, and we got, the part of the blessing was when we started the syndicate, it was an active bull market. Investment people were looking to deploy capital. Interest rates were low. There was a lot of liquidity in the market because of that. So people were really looking for new ways to deploy capital because, it wasn't like you were putting money in your bank account and earning 5% at that time. So startup investing was really hot. And, where we really came in was to start was Web3. We've always been pretty broad as a syndicate to frontier technology, but always kind of been reputable, our reputation and really kind of how we built our brand was at the foundational level around Web3 and blockchain businesses. And then as we've grown and expanded and evolved our network, we kind of grew to a more like just general frontier technology and like innovation oriented syndicate. Especially in those early days, and even to this day, it's a lot of experimentation. It's a lot of growth. It's a lot of communications. It's a lot of outreach and engagement and interactions and trying to build relationships and get to know your LP base. But in those early days, you could treat it like a fund because you kind of almost knew because of the predictability in the market and your LP base. As the LP base grew, I was able to get a sense of the type of capital we can deploy pretty predictably into an individual deal. Obviously not day one, because day one, you have a very small LP base. You're just grinding to get to those like bare minimum 100K checks. But as we grew and as time went on, and as we started to build a foundation of a strong syndicate group, I could pretty much talk to a company and be like, hey, we want to put in this. And we would be able to raise that amount in a pretty quick amount of time. Then as the market turned, it was funny because you saw like a very clear distinction, like the things that I used to be able to make predictions on and say, oh, that'll raise this, that'll raise that. As the market shifted, my predictions were wildly off. We weren't able to raise as much for the deals I thought would fly through the roof. And then, you know, you start to learn new trends and behaviors, and it's still something that, you know, we're 3 years into Redbeard Ventures Angelist Syndicate. You know, we're now up to about a little under 4,000, I think 3,900 or so LPs. Mm-hmm. You know, we've done, I think, about 200 plus deals, both as co-syndicates and as lead syndicates, which, you know, we'll talk to today, I'm sure, more about with Alex, because we do a lot of work together with Alex. And we've done it. We've deployed, you know, at least over $50 million. It's not, they don't have the best tooling in terms of like understanding our co-syndicate like amounts that we've deployed.
For sure not.
I mean, they need to build tooling for that. Again, it's something probably we'll talk about with Alex as well. But, you know, on the syndicate side, you know, we've been very active. I'd say our check sizes have probably averaged out around 250, 300K. You know, granted, today it's a little bit smaller. In the past, it was a lot larger. But, you know, I'd say 250 to 300 is where we've really netted out. And, yeah, it's just been an incredible experience, because to me, syndicates really enable us to have different types of relationships with companies, because we can work with that company and invest in a company at any stage of their growth, which as a fund, you really can't do that. You're kind of designated to certain types of stages. Like, you know, our RBV Fund 1 is a early stage blockchain fund. So like, you know, we're not really investing in Series Bs and Series Cs. Whereas, you know, once we invest, because we have a syndicate, we can follow on with that company through its duration and through its history. And that's been really, really valuable. So there's a lot of benefits.
I think also the difference too is like when we make a fund investment, we only have so many shots at bat, and you're thinking about every investment as how do we return the fund? Where when you think about a syndicate, it's like, hey, one recent one was Anduril, and you're thinking about Anduril as, hey, maybe that will 3x, 5x in the future, but it might not return a $25 million fund. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit of the difference. But I think what's interesting too is that we both actually started our startup journey kind of in the same way, where I think something really interesting about syndicates
is our investor journey, not our startup journey.
We have way different startup ones, but is that basically you follow these different syndicates, you get their emails and deal flows. And my first investment was SpaceX and then Carta, but I was able to learn so much about startups just by seeing these. The minimum amount to invest in these different syndicates is $1,000. And you could go ahead and invest and learn about them and see different deal flow, and ultimately decide on a sector that truly interests you. But yeah, we spoke about this a little bit, and it's the market right now and how much has changed over time, and how in the beginning you were able to raise $250,000, $500,000 in the span of 24 hours. And now it's a really different market. And actually AngelList just put out this report that talked about the state of US early stage ventures and startups in the third quarter. And obviously, AI is a big topic and something that a lot of investors were looking into. But when you see different deal flow, specifically to go ahead and syndicate, like, what are you looking for? Like, what are your tail signals that you think other investors should look for when they're following our syndicate, when they're looking at deals to invest in?
So it's interesting, because I have to have two different lenses. I have to almost run through a couple different filters as I look for syndicate deals. So first, I'll give some context of how we operate specifically. So we have our managed capital fund, which is a $26 million fund focused on early stage blockchain. Then we have our AngelList syndicate, which is, you know, innovation, frontier tech oriented, but is stage agnostic, sector agnostic. It's very opportunistic. And so the way we work is as a deal flow comes in, if it's an early stage blockchain deal, it first gets a look at the fund. If the fund wants to invest in it, the fund gets first opportunity, the fund will invest. And then often what we will do is we'll reach out to the company and say, hey, we're interested in putting in 500K from the fund, but we would love to also offer this to our LPs, because our fund LPs, as well as our syndicate LPs, love to co-invest alongside the fund. So we'll invest in the fund, and then we'll offer an allocation to the syndicate. If it's an early stage company that the fund wouldn't invest in blockchain, we will 99% of the time that won't reach the syndicate. The syndicate will see blockchain deals at like Series A and above. because those are really not the profile of a fund. So it's not as, there's not as much overlap. It'll see, the syndicate will see blockchain deals in the later stages, all co-invest, all anytime there's an opportunity to co-invest with any blockchain deal from the fund. And then anything that's outside of blockchain directly goes to the syndicate. So as we've kind of evolved and grown and matured this over the past 3 years, I would say our syndicate went from probably being like 90-10 early on blockchain to now probably about 50-50 blockchain to non-blockchain. So, you know, that's been a really great evolution and has enabled us to really expand our networks, expand our reach, expand our expertise, and also diversify, because I know myself, as well as other angel investors, like to have a broad, or like often have, want to have a broad, diverse portfolio of various different types of investment opportunities, because, you know, especially as an angel investor, you're really looking for the big hits and those big home runs, but then also you might want to have those like more safer, can deploy a little bit more capital, maybe some later stage, but can maybe low upside, but lower risk as well. You can do that type of diversity and portfolio construction within a syndicate model. So that's like the initial context, I would say, is that just to understand how the fund and syndicate kind of coexist. And then from there, Lon, what was the rest of the, what was the other part of your question?
Yeah, I just want to say, like, when you're looking at different investments to make, and you're a new investor, you're seeing also, like, right now, like, valuations are obviously lower than they were a year ago. It's the best time to deploy capital, even though people are wary to invest in these startups and there's not as much liquidation events. Like, putting your investor hat on and being a first time startup investor, like, what should they be looking for to invest? Well,
so I went, you know, again, as kind of been my own investor journey, you know, 2021 is when I really entered into the venture market, and the market was really frothy and incredibly competitive. I mean, any deal we spoke to was like 4X oversubscribed. That was like the running joke amongst investors. So as a new investor, I felt like my job was to prove that in a competitive market, in a highly competitive market, we can demonstrate that we can win access to some of the hottest and competitive deals in venture, to prove that we have that ability to demonstrate how we differentiate, how we relate to founders, how we identify deals, and how we can win allocations in highly competitive areas. Now, I also think that the valuations were insane then. I think the valuations were very frothy. It was very high. It was very competitive. So as I've grown as an investor, I've spent a lot of time kind of understanding also the economics, both of a fund and a syndicate, and, you know, how you're able to demonstrate the best ROI to your LP base and to your investors. And I got more and more interested in, you know, getting that the largest check-in as the earliest stage we can, bigger area, bigger opportunities for ownership. You start to understand ownership and that desire to get a bigger ownership stake early on. So I think, like, one of the big things that I've looked for I've been able to allow valuations to course correct during this down market, which has been great, because we were far slower in investing as a fund and a syndicate for pretty much the past year up until this most recent quarter, I would say. And, you know, the research said that last quarter was probably the all-time low on AngelList for venture activity. I believe that's what I was reading. So, you know, it's kind of in line with the market, is that we wanted to allow the market kind of to evolve from a valuation perspective. And then the things I look for, because, again, this is early stage, you know, that's where we really specialize, is early stage. So what I'm always looking for is, obviously, there's like founder market fit. I'm looking for big disruptive ideas that can be really innovative and have big upside and large total address, like large TAMs, large markets that you can capture. I want to see teams that can execute early. And for me, what that often means, like, if you have a founder and CEO, you know, founders need to sell. You know, I've been a founder my whole life. You have to be able to sell. And some of the earliest demonstration of selling is the team that you recruit, the people that are willing to sacrifice and join you early on. So that's a huge signal for me that this person can not only win, maybe if will have a better likelihood to be able to sell investors, sell their product, if they can sell other people to join them on this vision and this mission. So that's definitely an early signal, is what does the team look like in the early stages, even beyond just the CEO and founder. And then, you know, we're looking at traction around product, traction, early validation of, you know, some of their early hypothesis that they've made. And then obviously it varies on a case-by-case basis and a sector-by-sector basis.
Mm-hmm. All right. So before we bring up Alex, I just want to ask one final question. It's like, all right, you're just starting investing. Now you just mentioned what you're looking for. Like, how do people get started? Like, they could join our syndicate, they could join other syndicates. Like, is there any other thing that somebody who's starting out investing should really do?
Yeah, I mean, the way I think about it, and I've talked about it, is like, I set aside personally, and like, even this was what I was doing when I got started, and I still think about it this way, is like, I'll set aside a certain amount of capital each year for venture or angel investing. My like thesis is around, is especially early stage, you want to have a good amount of shots on goal. You want to have a nice, broad, diversified portfolio that's growing year over year and growing over time. So I think a lot about, how do I diversify my investments? What is my budget? What is my per investment? What am I looking? What are my targets? What am I looking to achieve? Also, I got a quick shout out to Alto IRA, because they're one of the platforms. Obviously, they're our partner and sponsor in this program. But you know, it's also about where you invest from. I started just investing from my personal name. Then I shifted on and introduced and connected my Alto account to my AngelList account, so I could start to build up my IRA with early stage venture opportunities. I also built an LLC so I could invest out of my LLC opportunities. There's a lot of really interesting nuances I've learned over time to become a more savvy investor. But I do think that the best way to get started is to join some AngelList syndicates, start to find some areas that you really want to dig into, whether it's a certain niche or being broad, and start to look at deal flow, and just even a brief thumbs up, thumbs down, or what I want to write a big check, medium check, small check, like start to quantify and measure how you evaluate your investments.
Awesome. All right. Let's bring up Alex, who's another partner of ours. He's a GP at Riverside Ventures, started a newsletter recently. Also, Alex, I'm so stoked to finally put a true face to the name, because the amount of emails we've sent back and forth, and I don't think we've ever officially been on a call. It's awesome to have you here. So thanks totally so much for joining.
Alex, what's up, buddy?
Hey, everyone. Great to be here. And yeah, look forward to all hanging out in person. As the next step to finally putting a face to name here.
Yeah, for sure. So I want to start off, because you obviously just heard our story a little bit about how Red Beer Ventures got started, but you yourself have your own syndicate, you have a fund, you have a newsletter. So what's your story about first starting to angel invest and really get into syndicates and startups?
Yeah. So a lot of what you guys said resonated with me. So hopefully we'll dive into that. But in terms of my story, right, I spent 8 years operating in early stage startups. First company joined as the 11th employee, first like sales BD hire. And then the second company I ended up joining was first employee pre-launch. So over that like 8 year span, it was awesome, you know, early stage chaos, right, experience that I got. And while I was at the second company and things were actually going really well and ultimately had a great exit there, kind of realized that I was not diversified at all, right? Like so much of my net worth was really tied to one single event and outcome of the company that I was at the time. And I was based here in New York, was meeting some founders, just kind of more interested in the startup ecosystem, and kind of decided that I wanted to angel invest, but also had essentially no deal flow, didn't really know where to start. And I remember at the time reading Jason Calacanis's Angel book, which kind of introduced me to syndicates, where I ultimately ended up backing his syndicate and then also backing other AngelList syndicates. And I think similar to Drew, what you said there, that was like a great opportunity to start to see deals, have like actionable opportunities, be able to compare and contrast, understand different like categories, markets, what felt like the right fit for me. And I kind of leaned into that first as an angel, where I guess I was navigating how to meet different entrepreneurs, also meeting a lot of other angel investors and VCs who I feel like I did so many meetings early on with investors, and they were actually like some of the most educational kind of opportunities through meeting these folks. And eventually, you know, back did a lot of small personal checks and kind of got to that point where I was like, hey, this syndicate makes a ton of sense, especially for me to kind of run one. So after about maybe a year or so of writing checks, I started to kind of morph into, okay, I want to run a syndicate. Let me figure out how to navigate putting an LP base together, also getting into kind of more quality deals and figuring out how I could be this like hustle guy who is sourcing deals for some VCs and also hopefully being able to be kept top of mind and see some of the more attractive deals. So I can get into more of the details, but that was kind of the intro to why I was attracted to angel investing, which ultimately led me to running a syndicate.
What would you, you know, when you think about how you got started, was there certain areas of or sectors or categories that you felt like you wanted to dig into first? Did you have some kind of strategy for, you know, what was the brand that you were going to develop? Like, tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So my experience as an operator was really B2B SaaS and selling, right? So my kind of value add and where I wanted to kind of come on the cap table and actually be helpful beyond a tiny check that probably wasn't all that helpful at the time, was really on helping with sales, right? Whether that's this kind of strategy and building the right team and infrastructure to sell versus, I guess I would say, and in addition to introductions to potential customers, introductions to potential partners. So anything from like a commercial standpoint is really what I was interested in. And then also like similar B2B SaaS companies, enterprise selling, I think was of highest interest to me just because that was the kind of skill set that I had or I was working with at the time. However, you know, I think I broadened quite a bit, similar to what you were saying, as an angel looking for more exposure. And frankly, you know, angel investing, I think, is a great way to learn about other businesses, other markets, other products out there. So I think I started where I knew, but kind of expanded pretty quickly and used it as a kind of educational opportunity out there.
So I'm really curious, what was your first investment that you ever made through your syndicate?
So the first investment that I actually ever did through the syndicate is a company called Loverboy, which is a CPG company. Spike Sparkling Tea, one of the folks on Bravo. This was like the earlier days, I would say. This was pre-pandemic, so I want to say something in 2019. And yeah, we invested super early, pre-launch, loved the founder fit, loved the kind of free marketing that was taking place on Bravo. But yeah, that was actually the first deal I ever did through the syndicate.
Yeah. And we were talking a little bit about obviously the market right now. And something interesting that AngelList just put out was the valuations. And in the 50% of the quartile, pre-seed, they're saying, is right around $9 million. Seed is around 18 mil. Series A around 45 mil. And then Series B around 110 mil. So I wanted to throw it over to you guys. Like, how do you feel about those valuations? Is that in line with what you're seeing? Is there anything that you're really skeptical on coming up? Or how do you guys feel about those numbers?
So I can go first. That feels slightly high to me. Right. Like, so we at Riverside, we've got the syndicate and we do quite a bit of deals there from pre-seed to Series A. Opportunistically, we'll do later stage. I also run a small micro fund. We're highly focused on $5 to $15 million valuations. So everything we've done out of our fund has been pre-seed and seed. Yeah. I mean, I think at like the pre-seed stage, we've been doing deals from maybe 4 or 5 million cap or valuation to 12, 13 on the high end. I think at seed, it's been 7 to 15. I mean, I think you said 18 being the average for seed. That still feels high to me. Maybe there's a handful of like AI deals that are raising at 30, 40, 50 plus that maybe skew that a bit, but that's like my gut reaction to what I'm seeing versus kind of what AngelList rolled out there.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting too, because I think we actually saw, and AngelList said that like the pre-seed and seed actually have gone up 12.5% from Q2, which was their worst quarter possible. Yeah. But it's interesting because we're seeing syndicates are the earliest stage, and a lot of LPs are seeing this as a little bit more skeptical to invest in earlier stage as opposed to later stage deals right now, which are getting more traction. Are you seeing that as well, where it tends to be a little bit slower given the current market?
Yeah, I wish that wasn't the case as a syndicate lead, but certainly slower. Like Drew was talking about, right, 2020 through probably the beginning of 22. And I think, deals, our check sizes too were a lot larger then. And folks have slowed down a bit. I understand why. It's also right, like I'm super founder focused, so I'm investing in people over everything else. Mm-hmm. The everything else piece certainly matters. So getting in at these early stage, right, there's so much risk. And I can understand from an LP perspective, not every LP is looking for that 100, 200x, maybe going for something that's a little bit later stage, more clarity that there's a stronger likelihood of success can make quite a bit of sense depending on, you know, how you're allocating and what type of startups you're looking for. So I guess, yeah, I understand that. I also think that the later stage deals probably feel a bit more unique from an access perspective to individual investors, right? So when you see some of these like sexier Series B or pre-IPO companies, you know, it is typically harder to get access to those than it would be, $1 million pre-seed or $2 million seed round. So I can understand that folks feel, like that's a bit more unique to get access there. I think we're starting to see a lot of these deals in secondaries late stage. So I would agree with you, Alana. Like I'm seeing a lot larger deals being put together at the later stages where that was not the case, a couple of years ago.
Something I've always found kind of like interesting, like, it's pretty obvious, but it's also a little frustrating, is like when the market is frothy and valuations are through the roof, everyone's throwing money at angel investments. Yeah. When the market's down, investment and valuations are super attractive, everyone's so much tighter. Like, is there something we're not doing right in educating angel investors of like when to be deploying, or is that just general psychology and there's nothing you can really do about it? Or is it just like really liquidity is tighter? Like, what do you think the reasons are for that? Because it feels almost counterintuitive.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't know if I've got a good answer to that either. Like I can, right, we can talk about the valuations, that we were investing in, but also like tier one VCs were investing in and how crazy they were then versus how much better they are now. But I just think there's so much tied from our LPs and our respective syndicates to like the public markets and how they're doing. And it's like when the money's flowing, that you can kind of pull from in the public markets, it's easier to allocate more in the private markets, regardless of kind of the macro situation or the valuations. So that's like my gut reaction. But there should be more capital flowing, I think, from individual LPs right now than there was before. However, I think there's some psychological piece to it that regardless of the justification of it or not, it is what it is.
Okay. So another discussion that we always have is, there's a few interesting points. One, with a syndicate, it's hard to have like, you lose a little of the personal touch, I feel, sometimes with all these investors that are joining this. How big is the syndicate? How many LPs do you have in your syndicate?
So we're close to 5,000. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important to note that, like, while that's a big number, mm-hmm. we do pay quite a bit of attention to kind of who invests in what and capital that's been deployed. So, not every deal goes to all 5,000 folks.
Of course. Yeah, totally get it. With that said, so it's like I think when it comes to syndicates, something I've always found that's like, this is a great opportunity to build a community. Yeah. Investors. And it's like, it's part of the reason why we're doing Red Beard Radio is like, I look at Red Beard Radio as an opportunity for us almost to learn in public, if you will. So like when we are diligencing a certain category or a topic, I'm like, why don't we just do this live? Like, let's dig into the topic. Let's talk to a founder. Let's talk to an expert publicly so we can just help people learn. Because my opinion is like, there is a breakdown in education in when it comes to investors. Like, investors are seeing these deals and they're getting and they're getting great deal flow, but if they aren't really informed on a sector, a category, the landscape, the ecosystem, you know, it's hard for them to feel confident to make an investment. They're just dealing with this one memo in front of them. So, yeah. You know, the whole thought is, how do we educate? How do we build community? You know, how do we think about that as a, and I think it's like, in my opinion, this is also, and I've definitely seen this from day one in the syndicate world. Syndicates are a far more collaborative ecosystem than I think traditional funds are. Syndicates, like, it's like a rising tide raises all boats in a way. And I've thought about that since day one. A lot of us share deals, we're cross-promoting, we're trying to grow each other's syndicates, because at the end of the day, the larger each of our syndicates are, the better we can actually all perform and deploy more capital. So what are your thoughts on just like the growth or community or efforts to grow the community and the investor relations aspect of it all?
Yeah. All hot topics for me, right? I think. Totally. So I agree with what you said, and I think I've been pretty vocal since past couple of months on just how collaborative the syndicate ecosystem is, especially versus traditional venture funds, right? Like, again, syndicates, we are less caught up with like ownership percentage and targets and elbowing people out of deals because we're not leading the rounds. We are not setting the terms. We are typically participating alongside. And I guess in that position or in that role, it's been awesome working with other syndicate leads to collaborate on specific deals, help fill allocations, essentially see a lot more deals, right? Like, I'm sure for you guys as well as us, that opens up so much more deal flow through this like co-syndicating mm-hmm. ecosystem. So I love that piece. And I would argue that across the syndicate leads, right, the community there, it's amazingly strong, right? I think we're always in touch about deals, sharing deals, in touch about strategy, whatever it may be. And that's been great. But to your point, Drew, about kind of managing a syndicate and having that GP-LP relationship enhanced, I think there's a lot that we can do. And the relationship isn't all that strong, because like you think about it, I run a syndicate with 5,000 LPs. It's just impossible to kind of have a strong relationship with each of them. So for me, I guess the one thing that I can speak to what I've done recently and am excited about is starting a newsletter where we primarily talk about syndicates within the kind of greater venture capital ecosystem. And, you know, because I've been doing deal after deal after deal, pushing out the memos, here's why we like the opportunity, here's why I like the founders, and kind of the whole nine on why we're participating in a given deal. But you kind of miss more of like my general thinking or macro thinking about the SPV ecosystem, the, you know, pros and cons, why we do things one way, why we don't do specific deals, and so forth. So I think for me, and partnering up with Zach Ginsberg, who runs Com Ventures, who I know you both know, like we kind of treat this as an opportunity to just share more of our thinking and be more transparent and communicate more with LPs in parallel to, you know, doing the deals that we're excited about going forward. So I like how you guys are doing Redbeard Radio, right? This is an awesome opportunity for you guys to have a voice and talk about why you're doing this, why you're doing that. I would think we've taken a similar yet different approach through the newsletter.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that I think more of this needs to be done. What would you say that, like, you know, we're both on AngelList. Those are the platforms we use. Where would you say AngelList has succeeded as a platform to support, you know, our efforts as syndicate leads? Where do you think it's fallen short, and what would be like some of the dream like enhancements you'd love to see? Because, you know, we do get tapped by other syndicate products all the time. I don't know if you get those messages, but like there are always new SPV management products, etc. To me, where AngelList has the moat for me is the community development and the discovery. I don't know if discovery is as great as I would like it to be, but I imagine we have to do a lot of the work on our own. But like, you know, those are the things that I think about when I think of Angelus. I think of, you know, seamless management, great, great support system, great customer service for syndicate leads. You know, the fact that we work hand in hand with, you know, our representative from Angelus, I think that's a tremendous value add. But, you know, there are definitely features and things that I would love and things that I think they do well. Where do you fit? Where do you see, like,
yeah. So I agree. I think, you know, they did really well with, like, first mover advantage and building a true marketplace, right? Like, I joke to people all the time. I'm like, you know, running a syndicate is kind of like social media, right? The more content you pump out, the more followers you're going to get. The more syndicates you pump out, the more LPs you're going to get. And I don't know of any other platforms that really have that kind of marketplace effect. So I think they've done a good job there, right? Like, I remember the early days of really grinding to, like, talk to folks I knew who I thought might be interested in writing small checks into startups, and then, you know, friends of friends, and kind of going down that whole path. And I think that's been helpful, but also, like, Angelus does have a strong ecosystem there. It is a little kind of tied to the market and what we were saying before. And then they also, you know, first mover advantage of just making, enabling syndicate leads to do deals, right? Like, when I first was running the syndicate, like, I also had a full-time job. We were growing a fast-growing startup. And Angelus did a really good job of helping me do deals, right? I
couldn't agree more.
Yeah, right?
I wouldn't have Redbeard Ventures or be probably investing today if it wasn't the fact that they were that I could just do the parts that I loved, which was, like, talk to startups, and then write up a deal and then send the deal out and grow the LP base. If there was anything else that I would have had to have done, because I was in the middle of selling my company at that point, there was no way I would have been able to do this. So sorry to interrupt, but I completely relate to that.
Yeah, agreed. Like, that's the beauty of the platform, right? Like, I can do other things and they can enable and empower me and all the other syndicate leads to get allocations, put memos together, share with LPs, and take on everything on the back end. I think, look, there's more companies that are now doing this. So there's probably other good companies that are doing this. So I think we right through, just like the democratization of venture capital, we see a lot of folks that are doing this on the side or starting micro funds or running syndicates. So there's a rationale for many other folks coming to the table here.
I think something interesting too is that, like, there is a lot of noise now on Angelus. Like, from where you guys both started yours to where it's at right now, like, there are a lot of syndicates, even though there's only like 25 truly high amount of deal flow and active. But I think it's interesting if you look at how many people, even though they're in your syndicate, actually don't get the emails because they either unsubscribe from one and now they don't see all your deal flow and unsubscribe from another. I think Angelus does a great job at discovery. Like, I think if you're on Angelus, you want to see a blockchain-based syndicate. You want to see one that does frontier tech, space, robotics. You could go ahead and you could find it very easily. And if you look at our deals, and probably yours is the same, Alex, like, more than half of the investors actually were discovered off of the Angelus platform. But something interesting that they do that I think might be a miss, at least from the investor standpoint, not from a syndicate, not from running a syndicate, is finding deals that excite you versus syndicates that excite you. And obviously this isn't pro to how we run the syndicate, but it's like, hey, you're really interested in SpaceX. You could go ahead and you could, like, wish list SpaceX and say, hey, I really hope if a syndicate has this, they'll send me the deal. Then it could be sent to a wish list LP. But it doesn't actually let you look at deals from the broader Angelus LP and then invest in a deal. And I think this would be beneficial to us because it's like, hey, if you're just an investor, you don't really want to go ahead and apply to every syndicate and get their emails. If you could just go on the Angelus platform and look at deals that are currently open, like, it might actually in turn help others invest in different deals and find more deals that they wouldn't have found otherwise. So that's somewhere where I'm like, hey, from both an investor and a syndicate perspective that we want to raise more money, it might be an opportunity for them.
I like that. I think that makes sense, right? And it's right. What you're talking about is just better matching across, you know, an individual as an LP, what types, what stages of deals they're looking for, and matching across, you know, that GP ecosystem, and more like tailoring of which deals go to which folks, or right, kind of like taking the wish list that they've got now a step further beyond, here's a specific company I'm looking for, to here's a type or a group of companies that I'd be looking for. I feel like, yeah, if you could do it by like vertical and stage, mm-hmm. or co-investors, like that would be a cool wish list category to
like the, it's like almost like the Amazon recommendations, like, hey, yeah, you invested in this.
Yeah.
You probably like these three current live investments. I mean, I personally would love that. Like I always say, you know, we have a bunch of people that have invested in sports leagues and teams with us. And I'm like, those people are most likely going to be interested in the next sports league and team.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so I definitely feel like there's an opportunity for some recommendation. Where do you think there are features that they, what do you like, are there features that you have like on your personal wish list that you would love? Like, man, I wish they had this because like, it would make this so much better. Are there like some like product features or product components, AngelList, that you think are missing today?
Really good AI-based deal memos. Like you cannot do one off of ChatGPT, but if they could take this deck and write the most amazing deal memo, like they have us forever.
I feel like you guys have way better ideas than me for this. I'm too caught up in the now and not thinking about the future of how to better run a syndicate. Like I would say my pain points, Drew, are similar to what you touched on, and like the community piece and how do we treat this more like a community, better, you know, more transparency, stronger relationships. You know, like the message channel is always open and we can communicate there. But yeah, I'd want to build stronger relationships and give more inside kind of thinking as to why we are doing a deal or do specific deals and how we think about deals from the syndicate. And then, yeah, Alana, I also agree with what you said, right? Like, oh, man. Oh,
I could go off about different ideas. That Angel,
I have a whole, like, screen one is my Google Sheet. Screen two is the deck. Also, like, squeeze in the website and just go through it, you know?
Also, like, a random one, but we're all doing follow-on rounds for investments. Why can't you just duplicate the one from the past? And like it already fills it in and then just updates some of the information.
Oh, that's good. Or like like here was the previous memo.
Oh, I should probably just start an AngelList competitor at this point. I mean, I have so much because I really live on that platform. But I want to ask, so like right now, I feel like a lot of investors are hesitant to invest given like you're not seeing as much exits, you're not seeing as much liquidity. Like, what do you guys like want to tell those investors who are hesitant, who don't want to be locked up for 7 to 10 years, see 9 out of 10 startups fail? Like, what's the other side of the story that people,
or just what are some insights and tips you want to share with investors you think that they should be thinking about as an angel investor?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think you got to play for the power law, right? You got to figure out how many deals you want to do or how much capital you want to deploy per year and optimize that to, you know, find that big winner that's going to carry 100, 200 losers and, you know, quote unquote, return the fund as if, right, I'd say you should treat angel investing as if you're going to be an LP in a fund, right? And then ultimately say, okay, great, as an LP in this fund, it will be deployed over 3-4 years. So if I divide, you know, divide whatever I'm willing to deploy across a 4-year period on a yearly basis, then that's how I should be thinking about how many deals that I'm going to do per year. And I think, you know, the syndicate model is, I would say, depending on how you play it, higher risk, higher reward, right? So like I've got folks who have done, you know, 5 deals with me, but one's a 30X and one's a 65X. And I'm like, well, is this person a genius or did they get lucky? I kind of feel like they got lucky, but then you have individuals that have done 100 deals with me and are probably optimizing the right way, right? I think, yeah, some of the things I would say are don't get too bullish on any specific deal. I've made that mistake in my early days and it was indeed a mistake. I think you really gotta, it takes time to see those 100Xs, but they happen. I have multiple companies in my portfolio that are on their way there. Not there yet, but I strongly believe on their way there. So really optimizing for those 100X opportunities is how you should be playing the game. And having 9 out of 10 fail or having a bunch of losers in the portfolio is part of the game. So go into it knowing that.
Yeah. So something that happened to us this week that was like kind of frustrating was that so there was a deal that we landed an allocation in. We were really excited about it. And, you know, we put it up on the syndicate and it fell flat. Like it just didn't get any traction. I was like, wow, I'm surprised. Like I thought this would, you know, move. I think it ended up, you know, maybe $13,000 or something. So eventually we had to cancel the deal, which sucks because like we had an allocation in it. We were able to like secure that. We were excited about it. If we were, you know, if we had, let's say a rolling fund that just invested in all of our, you know, opportunities, we probably would have deployed capital into that deal.
Yeah.
Then we found out probably like a year later, oh man, they had a big markup. They raised, they've just now raised their next stage. I think it was a Series A or Series B. They just raised $20 million. Like that stuff is just so painful because like, it's almost like it feels like it's out of your control. And I'm the kind of person where I'm like, well, what could I have done better? You know, do we have to engage people more personally, better memos, you know, grow the syndicate more? Like, I hate when those situations happen. Like, how do you prevent against that? Or is it like just part of the game for you? It's like you get this deal you're excited about and like shit, I can't even deploy it.
I would argue it's part of the game, right? Like I don't know the exact scenario. Maybe the memo could have been better. Maybe
I'm gonna add one context to this deal because I ran this deal and I sourced this deal. I realized after we sent it out that like 5 other syndicates beat us to the punch. So
that's just one situation.
But yeah,
this happens. Yeah,
for sure.
Here's the thing: there's pros and cons to syndicate. That is a clear con of syndicates, right? If it's not as, there's deals where, not as extreme of an example, but you know, at seed we invested like 100K. You know, we could have probably done 200, 300, and I was I was enthusiastic enough to do it, but what does that really mean if the LP base isn't? And then, as they grow on to Series B and we write, you know, a $500K to $1 million check because it's a lot more obvious there, well, you're like, you know, this is why I wanted to do it at 1/40th of whatever the valuation was at that stage. But frankly, look, I think there's a lot of pros and cons to syndicates that is a serious con. And I guess that my next point on that is like one of the hardest things I think about being a syndicate lead is explaining how it works to founders and maintaining that relationship. Cause you're like, hey founder, we're excited. We want to participate. Here's the process, right? I think it's going to be 100K, but like it might be 13, it might be 250. And if it's 250, I want to invest 250, not 100. So I think there's a whole important element to managing founders, which is quite different from a traditional.
That's changed drastically over the past year. So I would say 2020, 2021, though that area, I could pretty much spot on say, hey, we're going to raise 400K for this. We're going to raise 500K for this. We're going to raise 750. I need $1 million allocation for this. Like we kind of had a gut instinct at that point because we were doing a lot of deals and we were able to really predict how things were doing and like what, especially like Web3 deals, those were moving like crazy. If there was a token component, those were moving like crazy. Like that was, it was a very easy, it was a much easier time where I felt I was almost capable of operating as a fund where I could say, I want this allocation, fight for that allocation and be confident that I was going to be able to fill that allocation. Now it's a very different beast. You know, there are deals where, you know, it's funny, like we do a Web3 deal now and it's like a grind to get to 100K, but then we do Major League Pickleball and we had to give back $500,000 because we oversubscribed so much. So nowadays it's like, it is so hard to predict right now where things are going to fit. And then, you know, you do one sports deal, you do another, is it going to be the similar? So, you know, it's a much more challenging situation. But the bright side is because syndicates became such a major part of the investment process, during like the 20 to 22 period, I think the education is a little bit lower now than was needed back in the, like 2 years ago. Like when I would be like, we're a syndicate, it was like, what's a syndicate? Now it's like, we're a syndicate. And it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, how much do you think you're going to raise? The other part of that coin is I also talk about syndicates, both from a fundraising perspective, but also a marketing perspective. Because, you know, to be able, like some of these companies, you're looking at 4,000 accredited investors that could be, you know, either work at companies that could be customers of your products, could be direct customers of your products. There's a really interesting opportunity because, I mean, I'm sure you've seen similar metrics to us. Like the open rate on a post is probably like 60%. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah.
So I think like it's a very high open rate on these when you send out a deal memo or a deal. So there is this really interesting opportunity to use it also as a content marketing engine if you nail it right and you have a good content strategy and you're working well with the founder to know, hey, like I want to give updates as you get them. So let's treat this like a real content marketing strategy to get people excited, not just to invest, but to become consumers of your product. The other piece of that is that I also find that when people have vested interest, even if it's $1,000, they write a $1,000 check into a company, they become a far more avid fan, supporter. They'll promote it, they'll tweet it, they'll use it, the products that they're participating in. So these are, I think, some of the really exciting components of a syndicate. You know, on the other side of it, it's sometimes these companies can, if a company doesn't send regular updates, and we're not on top of reaching out to every one of them for updates all the time. The other negative is that they may not hear anything back from that company for a while, and that could be a challenge. So, how do you do that? How do you work on the update side? Like, what's your thoughts there?
Yeah, so I would say on the update side, it's kind of ad hoc and varies by founder and kind of what they want us to distribute to the syndicate. Frankly, I think there's an opportunity to rethink some of that and do a better job. But going back to comment on what you said, like I totally agree. I think really good syndicate leads know a decent amount of folks in their syndicate and can do a good job of explaining the value of the syndicate and how to leverage it for founders, right? And I think we've got, you know, a bunch of companies that have done a good job with that. Because it's like, right, as an angel investor, a lot of times I think the easiest and most straightforward way to be helpful is there's a need. Who can, you know, can you connect the dots? They're looking to hire somebody. Who do you know? They're looking to talk to funds to explore raising their Series A, Series B. Who can you introduce them to? They're looking for new customers, right? Like, who do you know or who's in the syndicate that might work there or, you know, be partnered with those companies? So I feel like, right, it's like, again, the value of an angel investor a lot of times is connecting dots. Well, if we're saying, hey, you know, we want to invest, come on the cap table. And by the way, there's, you know, 10, 20, 100 walking, talking brand/company advocates with their own networks. Like that is the best way to utilize a syndicate and ideally have those LPs with, you know, some vested interest that are reaching out to be helpful. So
That actually lends itself to an interesting, like, you know, another feature request that I would have is like, it's a little hard to be able to understand on a deal by deal basis to know, like, let's say there is a request. If there was a way to be able to understand your LP base at a deeper level and understand skills, experiences, professions, ways that they can benefit, it would be great to be able to be like, hey, I filter these 20 people that all work in big finance so that they can connect with this early stage founder. And if they so choose, be able to speak to them and give them feedback about an early stage product feature or whatever that might be. Yeah. Those types of things can be tremendously valuable that right now I still feel like we're still just scratching the surface and like trying our best to get as good of an understanding as we can. But I think we can do a lot better of enriching almost like the profile level of each person that's in our NLP base and then using it to filter from a different engagement perspectives.
Oh, I agree. Like you could tag people, but, and like, look at how many investments they made and stuff like that. But there is no easy way to like know truly who our LPs are, unless you look at their profile, go to their LinkedIn, make some notes, like there's no easy way to export that. And yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Alex.
No. Alana, you beat me to it. I was just going to say like, oh, the how much have they invested? How many deals have they been invited to? Like all that's great. Exactly what you said. Mm-hmm. The who are they?
Doesn't
pretty weak, right? Like,
yeah,
I'm always adding folks on LinkedIn who back the syndicate because I'd mm-hmm. like to have some connection or some understanding of like who is this individual, right? Mm-hmm. But I think honestly, and to your point, both pre and post investment, right? Like, let's say hyper competitive deal, and they really, you know, well, we could fill $500,000, but they can only give us $100K because whatever, it's multiple X oversubscribed. Right. I think that's an opportunity for us to be like, oh, you know, we have X amount of people from Shopify who were at Shopify or are at Shopify in our LP base. And for, you know, this made up business, the founder might be like, oh, would love to get Shopify people involved. And then the same use case kind of post investment for updates. I feel like that would actually be awesome to have.
100%. And sorry, I'm going to go ahead, Drew, really quick, but I'm just curious, Alex, like you've grown your LP base. You said almost $5,000. You guys put in one of, I'm pretty sure, your newsletters, like how to grow it. Obviously, we've seen like partnering with different syndicates helps us grow it, bringing in great deal flow, those deals like grow our syndicate base. Is there anything else you've done from a syndicate lead to really grow it to 5,000 LPs?
So, I mean, I think the first part before you jump in is just get smart about how other people run their syndicates, back syndicates, learn, see what they do that might make sense for you, that might not make sense for you. And then from there, I think a couple things. One, it's partnering with other syndicate leads like Redbeard Ventures and other folks out there, right? I think that's a great way to increase deal flow, bring more quality investments to your LPs, but also get more access to new LPs through the deals that you're doing and other syndicates want to work with you. The other thing I think is just being really, I don't know if aggressive is the right word, networking hard to find great people who can act like scouts and have strong deal flow, right? These might be your portfolio founders. These might be angel investors. These might be you know, operators at other companies or folks in venture, right, who are able to source deals. And I think, right, like syndicate leads have I think that we can run a better scout system than a traditional venture fund just because the economics of the syndicate versus the economics of a fund makes it a lot easier to be generous when it comes to sharing carry for supportive diligencing. So that's
which is
one
also,
thing that I'm
actually one of their, I think one of the killer features is the ability to spread out carry. Like, you know, we have probably a dozen venture partners now that are like people that we tap into for different sectors. And like, we give a substantial chunk of the carry on any deal they bring in their, especially in their area of expertise. And we're always like connecting with and evaluating people that could potentially be venture partners and even potentially own certain sectors within our syndicate. Cause I think there's a lot of, you know, I don't know if people like really think about syndicates as like entrepreneurial endeavors, but like there is a lot of room. I know that's like, and also it's also, cause also it's not really a revenue driving practice. It's like, it's hard to monetize it. So, you know, it's a long game play. But if you're able to think about how to, you know, kind of put some monetizable, like things like a podcast or a newsletter and, you know, generate a little revenue that could come back and help you support the syndicate to be able to do more. I think that would be a big advantage because I think that one of the major challenges is like, you know, and it's something angelists should probably think about. It's like, how do you support these syndicates are looking to grow angelist business? You know what I mean? So it's like, how does angelist provide more support for these for people like ourselves that want to go out there and market and promote and grow and tell the story, but because there's not as much like general day-to-day income, that's a more challenging endeavor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that's like the number one challenge right now. Mm-hmm. I think that's why folks are doing this primarily on the side, or they also have a rolling fund, a dedicated traditional fund. Or they have a job, right? Like I'm also part of Hampton, this private founder community, but also similar to what you said, leaning into now building more of a personal brand through a newsletter and being more vocal about this. And I think, you have to be quite entrepreneurial to kind of make it work, right? But it's also, it's just looked at being a syndicate lead is looked at quite differently now. Like, I was going to make the joke, I think we should send a calendar invite for like 10 years from now for all of us syndicate leads just to get together for dinner and see where the hell we are in 10 years and what's taking place.
That's a great question, though. Where do you think that investing and syndicates are in 5 to 10 years from now? Like, do you think there's a big change? Do you think there's some kind of evolution? Like, what do you think is like drastically different 5 to 10 years from now in this syndicate world? And like, I have my own ideas, so I'll share them in a second, but I want to get your thoughts.
That's a great question. I think it's going to continue to grow. I mean, I think it's grown a bunch over the past, five years, and like, we've seen that running angelist syndicates. But I also think you'll start to see more of these exits take place where people are like, oh, like that's why I've been doing this for 5 years. Yes, why I've been doing this for 7 years. Exactly. Like, you actually can make money doing this, you know? So I'm quite bullish on that, but you know, I haven't made any significant amount of money through syndicating deals as of yet. I have a small micro fund, but I think I like the syndicate approach more. There's a lot of pros and cons that I could go into. But I think it allows quite a bit of flexibility, and I like to be a bit entrepreneurial in operating and investing. And like, I don't know, the combination of both sits really well with me, but you know, I'm also kind of navigating on, okay, great. My management fees for the fund, there's no management fees from a syndicate. The management fees from this fund are so insignificant that like that's not going to pay for my lifestyle. Yeah. So I'd like to hope and think that it would be cool to see tools that support syndicate leads who are putting quite meaningful amounts of capital to work, be able to support themselves kind of from a salary perspective or management fee perspective, however you want to look at it. Mm-hmm. But I do think 5 years out, we're going to hopefully be those people and know people who have made large sums of money by getting into really awesome deals and syndicating them. Deal by deal carry too.
Yeah, no, I think like something that I like always tend to think about, and like, again, it's, I think we're closer today than we were, you know, when we first started, but I do think that a liquid marketplace, like if you think about what would be really interesting to me, I think that like the idea of accredited investors, I think is flawed to begin with. It's not right that you have to be an accredited investor to have access to being able to invest in startups. To me, that is like just a flawed concept in and of itself. So like part of me hopes that within the next 5 to 10 years, the criteria to be able to invest in startups, especially because you can invest a minimum as low as $1,000. So it's like, I don't think people realize that when you're investing in startups, it doesn't have to be $50,000 to $100,000. Right. You can invest $1,000 in a few different companies, and that should be available to everybody, just like publicly traded stocks are and things of that nature. So I think the accreditation rules need to lighten up a bit. The second part of that is I would love to see some type of open marketplace where, you know, let's say there is like a marketplace where people can, be able to get liquidity at various different stages, depending on their targets for their own syndicate. Because keep in mind, like in a fund, we're trying to return the fund and swing for the fences every time. But in certain syndicate deals, like a 7x might be fantastic and a huge win that you just want to capitalize on at that point. Yeah. Enable a more liquid marketplace, and like in my view, it should be something that like could end up being tokenized and decentralized, and you're able to buy and sell tokens and that are, you know, kind of your access to ownership in various different companies and startups. Like, I think further and further democratization of angel investing and supporting innovation in the startup economy is only a good thing. Like there's pros and cons to everything, but as myself, I want to be doing whatever I can for the rest of my life to continue to support innovation and further innovation. And if we can continue to open up, to grow the amount of people that we can educate and grow the audience that are investing, that means that there's more capital to work with, more companies that can be funded, more opportunities to put more capital to work in the best businesses, and continue. And especially with things like AI today, I mean, it's going to be this is going to be a new looking digital landscape in the next 5 to 10 years. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of new cutting edge opportunities to invest in. And I think that's, having us be at the forefront of that, and having an educated, growing audience to be able to provide deals to, and be able to open up liquidity and have different liquidity options would be a tremendous benefit, I think, to the overall angel investing ecosystem. Because, you know, for seven to 10 year windows is not for everybody all the time.
Totally.
And granted, part of the benefit of being a Web3 investor is like our token and lockup periods are, you know, often 2 to 3 years. So yeah. Once there's now that all being said, it doesn't mean I'm rushing to sell a company when the minute it unlocks either, because like I also know that we're investing in companies for long-term maturation, and these are companies with big visions. But there is that ability to liquidate on the token side that is very different than the equity side, which for us is, you know, a whole nother animal that we have to manage. I don't know if you've personally, have you done crypto deals where you have to manage tokens as part of your investment?
No, we we're not big crypto investors. So, don't have a ton of exposure and haven't had to manage that. But I do agree with your whole point about liquidity, right? I think, these 7 to 10 year lockup periods are tough, right? They're probably fearful to many folks. And for that reason, they're not participating in earlier stage deals. And similar to what I said, right? Like I love running syndicates because of the flexibility there. I think a lot more folks would be interested to invest in early stage startups if the liquidity had more flexibility there. So totally agree.
Well, Carta tried doing it. Like Carta tried building Carta X to really create this liquidity for investors or startup employees so that they could have this secondary market. Given they're still obviously trying to grow it, but it'd be interesting to see if AngelList really does this, because you're seeing so many syndicates too invest in secondaries. They have all the equity on their platform. Why not just let you resell it to see if another syndicate or another fund is interested in investing?
My final question, let's just go around really quickly and just like, what are the sectors or types of deals that are getting you most excited right now? What are you looking for? So like, what are you looking for and what do you want to share the most right now?
So B2B SaaS and FinTech, pre-seed and seed, I'm most excited about. I think also like within the B2B selling arena, we're starting to see a lot of great AI tools that are helpful to salespeople, whether it's automating information data into Salesforce, HubSpot, CRMs, pushing follow-ups, getting more information on their customers, right? I think there's so many like email marketing tools that are just creating quite a bit of noise and quite frankly, I think extremely tough to, as a salesperson, to kind of push a value prop for whatever product you're selling. So that's an area I think is going to be disrupted. I think there's going to be different ways of selling and leveraging relationships as well going forward here. And just an area that I'm paying quite a bit of attention to and meeting a bunch of founders trying to innovate and actively innovating in.
Lon, what about you? What are you most excited about and what are you looking for right now?
Yeah, well, obviously we're crypto and blockchain funds, we're always looking for that. I think we've been focusing a lot more on Web3 companies that are finding user adoption and like company adoption by marketing towards Web2 companies. Like we're doing one that's mortgage-backed securities and using AI, and they're targeting and working with the top fintech companies and traditional finance companies, but by able to find more of a market fit for these other Web2 companies, as opposed to what we were seeing in the past, which was Web3 targeting Web3. But out of the syndicate, I think we're doing a lot more frontier tech investments. We've done some secondaries that tend to do really well. We've done a lot recently of alternative sports leagues, and that's been super exciting. So I think we're just like looking at such a broad range, but I think getting in early a lot in the syndicates more of kind of that seed stage companies and really just giving LPs the opportunity to invest in some of these companies that will hopefully change the next generation of technology. And what about you, Drew?
I mean, like, listen, I think that what I'm looking for is A, I want to be investing in companies that are to push Web3 forward. I'm obviously a big believer in decentralization and the benefits that that brings, ownership of digital assets, et cetera. So now I'm kind of focusing on the companies that can drive either commercial adoption or real business use cases or real revenue models to their, whether it's their token strategy or their crypto or their Web3 business. So I'm looking for real business use cases on the Web3 side of things. On the non-Web3, you know, as you were saying, I'm a big believer in sports leagues and teams as an asset class. I think that, you know, in a world of on-demand, everything on demand, streaming, you know, it's, you know, live sports entertainment, I think is going to be one of the most valued assets by streaming networks, cable platforms, et cetera, because there's advertisers and the like. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to think about up and coming sports teams and leagues and how those will get opportunities to get kind of exposure through these big distribution networks that they never would have had before because of the broad, like, you know, you can maybe you do a deal with Hulu or Amazon or Netflix or Disney or ESPN or cable, or, you know, there's just so many different places you can go now to get that mainstream exposure, and with that becomes a big new revenue stream that I think is really exciting. AI is obviously incredibly exciting to me right now. I think it's the most disruptive technology I've seen. Pretty much, you know, if I look at AI and I see crypto, I see mobile, you know, like some of those are like some of the biggest things that have happened in my generation. And I think AI and the acceleration of AI right now is just tremendous. I think the big challenge is trying to figure out the companies that are going to be able to really develop moats and defensibility in this area, because so much is happening in the open source community. And it's also a low barrier for larger existing enterprise organizations to incorporate AI to enhance their feature set. So it makes it much more challenging for a startup to come in and create something brand new from scratch while trying to acquire a new customer base. So, you know, it's something I'm definitely looking into and deep diving into quite a bit. And I also think that AR and VR are almost at that point where we need to start really looking at it again, because, you know, obviously there's been that hype cycle a decade ago, almost, when I was mentoring an accelerator 10 years ago in VR. And I think now we're coming to that point where I think we're going to see VR and AR become much bigger, have a much bigger role in the hybrid workplace, in new types of interactions and new types of experiences, and with AI's acceleration and the ability to create content for those platforms, I think that's like the perfect marriage to see, you know, these new kind of platforms and mediums to engage with content start to take off. So, you know, those are just some of the areas we're looking at. I mean, obviously we're interested in, you know, biotech and other thing and climate and other areas that our venture partner network can really help us to get access to. But, you know, those are some of my personal ones that I'm really excited about.
Awesome. Well, this conversation was super just amazing. And I feel like we love speaking to other syndicate leads. So Alex, where can some of the listeners really follow you along? I know you also have Last Money and newsletter. What's kind of the best way to reach you and follow along your journey?
Yeah, I would definitely encourage folks to join my newsletter on Beehive called Last Money In. And then also I'm at Alex Pattis on LinkedIn, where I've started to be quite vocal. So those would be the best places.
And not Twitter.
That's, I know, right. It's surprising, potentially embarrassing, but you're not going to find me on Twitter right now.
We tried to, actually. I think we tagged him in an account of yours. So
I'm hiding from a lot of folks there for whatever reason.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for going on. Everybody listening, make sure to like, subscribe, comment. We're here to answer any questions that you might have. And thank you again, also IRA, for sponsoring this podcast. I'm really looking forward to next week. So thanks again for joining, Alex, and we'll see you guys next time.
Thanks for having me.
Later, buddy.
This has been a Redbeard Ventures production.